Well, hi Scott, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing today?
Great, great, great. I am very excited about talking with you. You're the executive director of the National Speech and Debate Association, formerly the NFL, the National Forensics League. How long has that name been in existence, the new NSDA acronym and name?
Well, we're on year two now. We will start this fall. We'll start year three of the new name.
Yeah, what is the brief, if you can give us a brief history of the National Forensics League, because that goes way back, and just explain to our listeners at the Training Minds podcast about the NFL and now the NSDA.
It really is an awesome story. Bruno E. Jacob, back in the 20s, was very involved with the College Honorary Society for Speech and Debate, Pi Kappa Delta. And he was the president of Pi Kappa Delta while attending Ripon College in Ripon, Wisconsin. And during that tenure, back in 1924, he was approached by coaches to see if he would, and by approached, I mean handwritten letter, of course, whether or not high school students could be members of the Pi Kappa Delta organization. Bruno said no, they couldn't, but he would be willing to explore the idea of a high school honorary society to celebrate and coordinate the efforts of high school students participating in speech and debate. And so ultimately, June 19th of 1925, the National Forensic League was born as a high school honor society to recognize participation in speech and debate. And it wasn't until 1931 when Bruno made the decision to start a national tournament to further celebrate the accomplishments of students that were participating around the country in the activity. There were 50 students that participated in that first event from 17 states, and over the last 90 years, it's grown a little.
The homeschool leagues, the NCFCA and STOA, there's two of them. There's about 5,000 families who are involved with it. So it pales in comparison with the National Speech and Debate Association. How big is the National Speech and Debate Association?
We have 3,500 high schools and over 1,000 middle schools that were members last year. And we do have some homeschools that are members now. So we do have a little bit of a participation around the country from homeschool programs. And we're excited about the idea of more homeschools finding a place.
Let me tell you a story, because I was at the expo at your national tournament. Your national tournament this last summer was over the same time as the NCFCA's tournament. But I was able to attend your Sunday expo, and then I hung out there for a little bit on Monday. But at the expo, a homeschooler did come up to my table and got into a very good conversation with me. And she said, "Yeah, homeschoolers can get involved with NSDA." It just to tell you kind of a history of the homeschool leagues. The homeschool league started in 1996. The Homeschool Legal Defense Association started it. And it was very small, but it really took off. It fit very nicely into most homeschoolers' educational goals, and so it was really. It's now today. It's become kind of the homeschool sport. This is the. It's almost like the jocks of the homeschool movements are debaters, and it's really fun. And I'm in the mix of all of that, but. What this homeschooler, well, the way it was considered back then in the 90s is you would have to join a public school to really be to participate in the then NFL, and it's not that way in so much anymore, is it? Do you know how? I should ask a question. Do you know how a homeschooler can participate in the NSDA?
Sure. So, we still have the same structure that at the core of our membership is a school-based membership. But what we've done now is expand that definition of what a school membership is to include homeschool programs. The only caveat to that is that a homeschool must be eligible to compete against public and private schools in their state. So as long as the state organization does not consider it, you know, an issue or create ineligibility for the public or private schools in the area, which most states allow some level of homeschool participation and, you know, co-curricular activities.
Right.
As long as that's okay, then we allow a homeschool to set itself up as a member school.
Okay. Okay. That's how it is. A homeschooler sets themselves up as a member school as long as they, in their state, are considered legitimate home educators. Then it's all good. And that actually that explains most homeschoolers out there. I mean, there are fringe homeschoolers. I think the stereotype is bigger in people's heads than that's actual reality. And home educators are homes, moms and dads who are trying to eke out the best education they can for their kids. And that's, you know, tell you the truth, that's why they want them to involved in speech and debate in either the homeschool leagues or in the NSDA. So,
and we really feel like our organization can complement the participation that the homeschoolers are already having in the other two organizations. Mm-hmm. One misconception or misunderstanding about us is that we are only a national tournament event, and that the primary reasons for participating in the organization would be participation in our nationals. And for the homeschoolers out there that, you know, and the parents who think, you know, we already have a national event that serves our needs in that area. I would agree that if you have that feeling that portion is already meeting the needs, and there'll be some that would like the additional opportunity for competition, and that's great as well. I would say there's another area that the organization has to offer that is actually our primary area, I think, beyond the tournament, that the homeschool programs could really benefit from. We have a very comprehensive programs and education department that provides thousands of educational resources in the various areas of competition. We have a webinar series that we put on all year long with expert. I mean, last year we had over 9,000 people participate in our educational webinar series throughout the year, gaining that level of additional education, both for adults and students, that are provided with the membership that the students and the homeschools have. And also, we have our 90-year-old honor system, which is well-established and recognizes for the students and is accessible for to use for, you know, college applications and, you know, job applications and so on, to establish when the student moves on the success and the experience, education, and training that they've received through the activity. So I think those are two really important things that a homeschool can get out of membership.
Yeah, yeah, and I agree. I think and that's the whole reason I'm talking with you, Scott, because I do well with the homeschool leagues and everything, and they offer a lot of opportunities, but homeschoolers really should consider the opportunities that NSDA offer also. They're an open league and they're open to homeschoolers. And I think this is great. Okay. Well, let's get into some specifics. Now the homeschoolers are really thinking this is how our leagues work. Both leagues are very similar, though the events somewhat shake up a little bit when it gets into the details. And like they say, the devil's in the details, I suppose. Let's talk through the events that NSDA specialize in. So that a homeschooler out there going, okay, I can compete in perhaps a dual league situation where I can compete in my homeschool league, but I can also compete in NSDA events in my area. Can we talk about the nuances and stuff like that of specific events for a little while? Well, let's talk about, first of all, policy debate. Team policy debate in the homeschool leagues is really popular. How popular is it in the NSDA?
Well, policy debate, you know, is our longest standing debate event. It is the original debate event that really the organization was founded upon. It remains, you know, extremely strong. Just like I believe in the homeschool league, it's, you know, it's a two-person partner debating on policy issues. We debate the national resolution that's provided, each year for the entire year. So that national resolution is then debated by those teams all year long. And our version of policy debate that we support is the debate is about an hour and a half long. Mm-hmm. Since we're nationwide with the organization, as you can imagine, just like within the homeschool leagues, the style of debating is very different depending on the state that you're in. There are some places where the pace of debate is very fast, and there are other places where the pace of debate is substantially slower. And of course, the types of arguments that are used in policy debate vary greatly depending on if you're in a local league, if you're in a particular state, if you're in a particular, if you're more involved in the national circuit, style of debating. So,
there is a difference between the homeschool leagues and the public school leagues in the fact of who the judging pool is. Mm-hmm. The homeschool leagues really do try to have at least one third of their judging pool from community judges. Kind of keeps the speed debate out of the equation. If you go too fast, you're going to lose some judges because that could be the first debate round they've ever seen. And that's just kind of the judging pool that they can expect. But how do things shake out by the time you get to nationals? Is it heavy with speed debate, or is it not? How does that shake out in the end? Who's winning nationals?
That's a really, really good question and an important question to address, because a lot of people would be shocked to know that in policy debate at the national tournament, the final round pace of policy debate is the slowest paced debate of any of the events.
Really?
Because policy debate has so many judging nuances, we get that same feel, even at a lot of the district qualifying tournaments, that same feel that you're describing about how the pool has such a variety and mixture of individuals in the way that they judge and the pace that they want to hear or, really feel comfortable hearing, that it slows down the debate because debaters don't want to lose a debate because the judge didn't understand or comprehend what they were saying because of things like that. So it slows way down almost to the extremes just to ensure that all judges, no matter where they're from in the country, will be able to handle the arguments.
Well, that's actually encouraging because back in the 90s when I was involved in the NFL, up in North Dakota and Minnesota, and it seemed like policy debate was going out because of speed debate. Speed debate was taking over. People couldn't just jump in and watch around and kind of keep up. You needed to be sort of born and bred in this community, and they were dying out. Has there been a turnaround in policy debate? No, it's.
I think there's been a stabilization in policy. Now, there are parts of the country where the policy debate has had, you know, times of rebirth and regrowth. And because it's such a large, you know, activity and it's so expansive, it is year to year. You know, you'll have pockets of the country that just have a real drive and push and a rebuild. With, you know, they kind of start with novice level training. Maybe, you know, there are parts where they've been able to include the homeschool programs in the area, so they're able to build. There are also parts of the country where we've had resurge because of Urban Debate League programs, and we've been able to, you know, create a connection with those existing debate programs and you know, merge them into the association, and that creates a research in policy debate. All of those efforts, homeschool, urban debate leagues, what the association's doing, they all with you know, small rural programs trying to create access that those programs can have to the activity of policy debate. It all leads to interesting surges in participation in the activity. And then, you know, policy debate tends to be one of the most expensive types of debate to participate in beyond the local. And even, you know, locally, it can be expensive to participate in policy debate because of the research necessary and the time and you know, intensive nature of it. So that's, you know, been the problem from when back, you know, back when you're describing. But I think it's stabilized. I think people are really understanding the educational merits of policy debate and why, you know, losing that would be, you know, really just a really unfortunate thing for our field. And I think great educators are doing what they can to ensure that that doesn't happen.
Well, that's excellent. I'm glad to hear that the policy is making a comeback or a stabilization, as you say. That's a good way of saying that. Let's talk about something that's not offered in the homeschool leagues, and this is called a public forum debate. I'll just explain to you how I view it, and I would imagine most people who are involved in the homeschool leagues view it this way. It's kind of a simplified policy debate where it's just easier to get along. They actually emphasized non-speed debate back when it started. I think it started in the early 90s. That's about when I was coaching it. And that's the way it seemed. This is a simplified policy debate, team policy debate. But it's actually very, very popular in the NSDA. Am I right?
Yeah, it's by far public forum debate. It has become it has the highest level of participation nationwide. Mm-hmm. So if that's the definition of most popular, then I would say.
Well, give me the two minute snapshot of what public forum debate is.
Sure. So I would definitely not call it policy light. That's not. It has evolved since it first became an official national event in 2002. It has really evolved. Public forum debate was designed and still remains an event where monthly debaters have the opportunity to debate a unique resolution that in many ways is stripped from the headlines. And that is the more than dial back policy or a different type of LD, a Lincoln Douglas debate or something like that. Public forum, the topic is what is really unique to the situation. The topics are stripped from the headlines. They're usually very hot topics that people can get information readily, that they can find things on quick and very in-depth searches. So it doesn't matter what level you are in your program building, public forum is accessible. It often doesn't have the financial barriers that other events do, because it really is, you know, 4 weeks on, then you move on to the next event. The other thing that's really awesome about this, and, you know, public forum's 40 minutes long. It is two-on-two debating, so it's still, you get that partner feel to it. Each partner speaks an equal amount of times, but shorter speeches, allows students to be much more, it forces them to be much more concise and specific in their argumentation and the amount of arguments that they choose to put in the debate. They have to be really choosy because you don't have as much time. And it's so accessible to both the debaters and the audience, because now you're talking about, when you talk about members of the community having the opportunity to judge it, there's nothing easier really than judging topics that are stripped from the headlines, because mm-hmm. you have some level of awareness, at least, of the, you know, of the general topic area.
And just to be clear, so the league releases every month a new public forum topic.
That's right. In fact, members are, what we do is we release the month before a ballot of two potential resolutions.
Okay.
Topic area. So we'll pick a general topic area. Maybe it's K-12 education. Then there'll be two different resolutions, and the members get to vote. Both students and advisors get to vote on which resolution they'd like to debate. And then a month in advance, we publish the winning resolution from the ballot and the official resolution for that next month.
Wow, that sounds fun. So the members are actually participating in the resolutions that they end up debating, and then they roll with it. It seems it has a kind of an extemporaneous feel to it, doesn't it? Where it's like an extemp debate.
Yes, and you know, the other thing that I think would be really relevant to homeschools would be if there are, first of all, any team event is an excellent opportunity for homeschool students to collaborate with other homeschool students in a partnership, and that's a great thing. Yeah. The other opportunity is when you're talking about collaboration and practices, right? Two teams doing practice rounds, getting the opportunity to practice against one another. Because it's 40 minutes in length, it's very accessible in the schedule. You have the opportunity in a one-hour period to have a debate, have feedback and discussion about that debate, and move on to other things, educational opportunities during your day. And that works well in the traditional classroom, and I would think it would work really well in the homeschool environment as well.
Oh, yeah, that's exciting. Let's talk now about Lincoln-Douglas debate. Lincoln-Douglas debate is about as large and well-participated as team policy debate in the homeschool leagues. The difference is, that I see, is that the leagues release one resolution every year. One of the two homeschool leagues started a two resolution per year. Explain how the resolutions work in the NSDA for Lincoln-Douglas debate.
Sure. So what happens for us is we put a committee together that meets in the summer during the national tournament, and they create a list of 10 potential resolutions for the following year. And then we then allow the members to vote on their priorities and of resolutions they would like to debate. And every other month, so every 2 months, there's a new resolution. So there'll be a September-October resolution, an October or a November-December, January-February, March-April, and a nationals topic. The highest voted topic is the nationals topic, and then we work our way back through the school year. So March-April is the second most popular resolution. January-February is, in theory, the third most popular, because they are voting on each of those time blocks what they would like to see. So the nationals one gets its preference, and then the nationals topic is no longer eligible for the March-April. So then the next most popular takes that slot, and you work your way back. The September-October topic each fall to start the school year is the fifth most popular topic votes the year before. Yeah, of the 10.
Okay.
Because the votes are occurring right now. And then on August 15th, we will publish the September-October resolutions.
Okay.
Our resolution. And then we also have a resolution, a standing resolution in Lincoln Douglas debate for September and October for novices. And that's one on civil disobedience in our society and whether or not it's, you know, appropriate and just. And we keep that same resolution for all novices if they choose, if a tournament chooses to use it, because it allows us to pump out a ton of educational materials on the issue. And it allows for educators and coaches to kind of know how they're going to onboard their students each year into Lincoln Douglas debate.
So that one is the same every year, and for the novice track for September, October.
Yep.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, that's a great idea. I like that idea. I'll make that recommendation to the homeschoolers.
it would be a good idea even if it wasn't that same topic, just because it, I mean, it would be awesome if it was that same topic, because they would immediately gain hundreds of educational materials and webinars on that. But it, regardless, it's a great idea because of the consistency. And then you've got upperclassmen, even within a family or within a set of homeschool, you know, families there that have debated it, went through that process, and now you can go back and work with their peers that are just starting the activity.
Exactly. Oh, that's. I also publish material for the homeschoolers too. So I have this nonprofit, but I also have a for profit where we publish material. Boy, I would love to have the same resolution every year, because then we would be able to build on that. And oh, that's a great idea that you've got going. Okay, we got to. We're talking a lot. This is good stuff, Scott. Boy, I really appreciate this. Let's talk about speech events. Now, the way I see it, you have three general categories: extemp, interps, and oratory. Extemp is split into two different kinds of extemp, right? Can you explain how that's set up?
Sure. For our national series, our qualifying series of nationals, we have international extemp and United States extemp. So the events are exactly the same, 7 minutes of speaking time with 30 minutes of prep. It's just the nature of the questions are international in scope and then, you know, U.S.-centric. Now, it could be U.S. foreign policy, but it's U.S.-centric on the United States extemp side. Many states in our organization and many regular season tournaments combine the two. It's just such a popular event. And some history, we used to be boys extemp and girls extemp years ago.
Wow. And
when we realized that was completely unnecessary and completely inappropriate, because females most certainly and males can compete in the same forensic events together.
Exactly.
And it was beneficial educationally for them to do that. That when they did that, the compromise was, well, let's not lower the amount of extemp going on. Let's create international U.S. And that idea was born, and it has stuck so far for about three decades now since the change.
Okay. And let's talk about interps, the interpretive events. Can you give me a 2-minute summary of interps?
So we have dramatic, we have humorous, and we have dual interpretation. Humor and dramatic are exactly how they sound. They're 10 minutes in length, they're memorized, and they are humorous in nature or dramatic in nature. And that is up to the interpretation of the student and the judges. Both have serious points and humorous points, you know, cross-applying in the event. But the nature of it is humorous or dramatic. Duo is completely open or devoid of a definition on humor or drama. It's two individuals that are doing some type of a play or prose or novel or some piece of literature like that, and that's the same for dramatic humor. And in duo, it often has several levels of humor and drama throughout on a variety of issues that touch our society. Great, great. And it, you know, at the core, the responsibility of the performer is to interpret the literary material that they've memorized.
Okay. And do you have script submissions in the NSDA?
We do. We have our competition. When you qualify for nationals, you are required to submit a copy of your cutting and bring along your original script to the competition. And the material you use in intro must be printed and published. We do have a list of acceptable websites that meet the criteria of our rules, where you can also download scripts to use, but it must exist on, you know, within that list of websites in order to use that material.
Okay, wonderful. And now the last one is oratory. Can you explain oratory for me?
Oratory, 10 minutes memorized, often persuasive in nature. And when I say often, I would say 99% of the time, oratory is a persuasive speech. Students tackle an issue, establish an issue or a problem or something like that, and often propose potential solutions or show the audience what a world would look like if that issue or that problem were solved and how we might go about getting there. It's one of the more inspirational events because it's original. Students get the opportunity to write their feelings on a particular topic, and that really tends to prove to be awesome. And, you know, one thing I thought I should mention since we went through all these events, one great thing about the nature of what we do is we put so much on video. At the national tournament, we videotape all of the final rounds, and then we return those back to our website so that members can access those, view those as educational resources, and see the highest level of example of these speeches, of these performances. So,
yeah, and those are really well done, by the way. One of the leagues, NCFCA, does a spotlight final rounds. They do all the competitors who won do a showcase. They call it the showcase, and they videotape it, and they too push it back on there. The STOA hasn't been doing that in the last few years. I've been encouraging them to do that, but boy, does that make a bit. That really helps too, because then teachers and coaches have a large group of great examples of an end product of how good to do these speeches, like an oratory. If you could watch all 8 finalists at nationals and their oratories, they become great teaching points, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. Did we miss any speech events in there, or did we get them all?
No, I think we've got the interps, public speaking. I think we've got the 3 interps, 3 public speaking. I think we've covered.
Okay, yeah. 2 extemps, 3 interps, and oratory. That's your speech lineup at nationals.
We did miss one debate event, and I'm sure if members listen to the podcast, they'd be very upset if I did not mention.
Okay, yeah, go ahead. One more debate event. What is it?
Support congressional debate. And that is, you know, it's very popular around the country. And it's mock congressional debating. And what's really awesome and unique about that is students get the opportunity to prepare, you know, their opinions on bills and resolutions that are created by the students. And so there's a lot of originality there. There's a lot of opportunity of choice on which side of the debate you want to focus on. And many times at the national tournament, the bills and resolutions being debated have matched what's happening in the real Congress. Hmm. And best example is they debated during the week this summer whether or not a female should be added to our currency, a picture of a female on our currency. While the Nationals was going on, they announced that a female would be on the $10 bill. So it's that type of thing that happens all the time. It's a great event.
That's great. Now, did that used to be called Student Congress?
Student Congress, formerly known as Student Congress.
Okay.
Now,
okay. Okay. Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You know, Scott, this was an excellent interview. This is really, you did exactly what I really wanted you to do, is paint the picture of how a homeschooler can be involved. And I think you've answered all the questions that a typical homeschooler who wants to be involved as much as they can in speech and debate would ask to see how they can be involved with NSDA.
Well, Chris, we're very excited for homeschoolers and homeschool parents to consider our organization, and we're happy to answer any questions they might have. I think one big question that they might ask that definitely should be answered is, how would they get in touch with us? And the easiest way to get more information is to go to speechanddebate.org, to the website, where mm-hmm. they can find all of the contact information. They can find a number of free resources to get started and to consider the organization. And that would probably be the best place for them to start if they're interested.
Excellent. Excellent. I'm sure people might even see some of my kids involved in NSDA. We've got that thing. We're thinking through that right now. But, well, thank you very much, Scott Wan, the executive director of NSDA, for taking the time this morning with me to talk to the audience of homeschoolers.
You bet. Have a nice day.
All right. Take care, Scott.